Time to get our view from where? The north. You can catch all he's up to, Comcast Sportsnet in Portland. Online, CSNNW.com. A lot of shows, The Five, Talking Ducks, all on channel 737 on your Xfinity system. You will definitely want to engage this season on Twitter. The handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing?
It's football season, man. I'm doing splendid until the Bears are about 2-8. But other than that, I'm having a good fall.
You know, out of respect to our friendship, I was actually not going to ask about that just yet. But your level of anticipation for what to expect from your beloveds this season on a scale of 1, they're the Jets, 10, they're the Patriots. What are you thinking?
Ooh, you know what? I'm holding out hope. The defense is going to be better. The running game is going to be there. I'm holding out hope that Glennon can at least be average. And if that happens, they can be 8-8.
All right.
It's possible.
All right. Question I heard working out on SportsCenter this morning, and I know you've occasionally made a wager, certainly within the realm of the law, and so the bet is you had to bet cash that had meaning to you. Of these three teams, most likely not to win their title, Patriots the Super Bowl, Alabama the Natty, Golden State the NBA title.
Easily, without a doubt, it'd be the Patriots. Gotta go Patriots on that.
Yeah, that's...
We all know in the NBA, once you build an elite team, you have a shot to run off numerous titles. And Golden State is just ungodly with Durant. And Cleveland's going to be a mess. I think Boston's going to win the East, personally. So that, to me, is almost a given. Alabama, you know they're going to be in the playoffs. That's almost automatic. And they only have to win, like, they only have, like, 4 or 5 real games a year, right?
Right.
They're either 8 or bogus. They just sort of play them. And, but in NFL, you have parity. Like, you can lose more games in NFL than you can in college and still win it, but there's so much parity. Look, I mean, last year they barely won the Super Bowl last year, and they got lucky to win it last year, and I'm not buying that Gronk coming back and then getting Brandon Cooks makes it unstoppable. I don't believe that at all. So I would definitely go with New England not winning it out of those three.
Well, that has been an overwhelming consensus. So when I was groggy and just started my workout, it seemed like a tough question. It ended up really, really easy. So I saw some on Twitter maybe fell into the dunderhead category, but I thought for the most part there was actually some interesting talk about the most significant moments in Oregon football history. You put together your list, had the pick out of the top 5. So while that might be a favorite moment, what did you use as your parameters and kind of deciding factors to put this list together?
Well, first of all, it wasn't top 5 plays of all time.
Right.
And people keep telling me, it was a great play. I know it was a great play. That's not the question. It's moment. And a moment is any instance where something happened. It could be anything football-related. And to me, there's no way that an interception in week 8 of a college football game in 1994 is the greatest moment or a top 5 moment still for a program that's won 2 Fiesta Bowls, 2 Rose Bowls, have been the 2 national championship games that has a Heisman. That's 7 right there that, to me, are way better than that pick 6. And here's some myths about the pick 6 I want to dispel real quick. Number 1, they did not need to beat Washington to go to the Rose Bowl. That's a fallacy. Had they lost that game, they still could have finished 6-2 and been in a 3-way tie with SC and Arizona. Now, unless I'm missing something, the tiebreaker would be head-to-head, and Oregon beat both those teams that year.
Yep.
Oregon still would go to the Rose Bowl without beating that game. A lot of people think that game won them the conference and got them to the Rose Bowl. That's not true. Number 2, they were 4-3 going into that game and were 5-3 after winning that game. So it was pretty still early in the season. They had a lot of work left to do. They had to beat Arizona, which was a top 10 team. They had a close game they won at Oregon State. They beat Arizona 10-9, by the way.
So yeah, the World Cup touchdown.
To do.
Yep.
Right. The other thing is Washington that year, that was a down year for Washington. They finished 4-4 in the conference. So it's not like they beat a Goliath Washington team. They beat an average Washington team. So those are just some things. Oh, another thing. They were winning the game. They weren't losing, and that pick 6 won it. The pick 6 clinched it but didn't win it. And in the third quarter, they went on a 98-yard drive to take the lead 24-20 to set up the dramatics that led to the pick 6. So I think it's a great moment. I think it's awesome that it lives in this lore for Oregon. But come on. You can't tell me that's better than actually winning the flipping Rose Bowl, can you?
No, I thought it was interesting. And like I told you, fans hold it sacred. Analysts, analysts have it more in its place and understand how much it was appreciated, I guess, makes more sense.
Yeah, and I'm cool with it being... I keep saying people romanticize it. I'm cool with that, but you cannot convince me. And I know I'm not a Duck fan, and maybe I don't get it. But if your mind sparked everything that happened, are you honestly going to tell me that if I asked you right now, which would you rather have? Would you rather erase that from history or erase the 12-0 from history? Would you erase that from history or the Heisman? Erase that of the two Rose Bowls. Erase that of the two Fiesta Bowls. What would you rather erase? I think anyone would say erase that play because it was just one play in the middle of the season.
But then what will we have out on Duck Vision before games? We'd have a gaping hole. We're talking...
So you show Joey's throwback from Keaton Howley against Texas. I don't know.
Talking Duck football with Aaron Fentress of Comcast Sportsnet. I was listening to you guys and tried to engage on Twitter yesterday, but I had other stuff to do. I was talking about the decision after 94 to promote Mike Bellotti, who... would validate 94 with the Cotton Bowl in 95, bring in the new offense, hire Chip Kelly. How etched in stone should that moment be when they were like, you know what, we're not going outside the program, our offensive coordinator's the new coach?
No, I think that's definitely a top 15 moment. I wouldn't quite go top 10 because I just named 7. I think the pick is in the top 10. I think the hiring of Chip, I think, for me, number one, and I in part did this just for the discussion part, but I actually do believe this was a huge, huge moment, was when Bellotti in 05 switched to the spread.
Yep.
Because no spread means no Kelly, it means no Blair offense, it means no Mariota. And we all know that the reason why they had the run they had was because they were a special preparation offense. The rest of the conference didn't know how to deal with it. USC and Washington were down, and they just ran amok in the conference for 4 or 5 years there. They wouldn't have done that if they were huddling up and running in pro style, I don't believe. They wouldn't have had the linemen to pull that off. One of the reasons they went to a spread was because it helped the offensive line. It made them a better running team. You took guys out of the box, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, in terms of the success they've had the last 10 years, that was the signature moment. Now, some people say, well, it was hiring Kelly. True. I mean, Kelly definitely right there. But they don't hire Kelly unless they switch the offense. And remember, they were 10-2 the year they switched that offense. And if not for Clemens breaking his leg, they go 11-1 and beat Oklahoma and finish in the top 3. They were ranked number 5 in the nation going into the bowl season. So they were having success before Kelly. Kelly took it to another level, but for me, the changing to the spread was a bigger deal than hiring Kelly.
Yeah, and I always remember.
But they're linked. You know what I mean? They're linked.
No, there's a lot of links there. Like I said,
exactly.
The 03 loss to Utah, where Bellotti was like, this offense Urban Meyer is running with this Alex Smith kid, what is it, a spread? That looks kind of interesting.
Exactly. And then 2 years later, he finally pulled the trigger. Exactly.
All right. You know, I didn't get inundated with calls or texts or tweets, but, you know, after last week's opener to start the Taggart era, so the new rankings came out, and people were like, well, they scored 77 points. How did they not make the top 25? And I was like, well, first of all, they started out with 21 also receiving votes. They more than doubled. So unless a bunch of teams in front of them went in the tank, I mean,
exactly.
No, as I say, that's true to form. You got to be out of your mind to think they're going to jump because of that.
I'm sorry, say the last part again.
No, I'm saying even the most diehard, insane fan has to be out of their mind to think they're all of a sudden going to jump 7 places in the rankings because of that, right?
Well, every fan base views the rankings through their own prism, right? So everyone wants to know how come their team is getting screwed by everyone else. Every team in the nation is doing that outside the top 3. And even in the top 3, number 3 is mad they're not 1, right?
Yeah.
But no, you can't assume that voters around the country, 1, were even watching that game at 8 o'clock Eastern time, and 2, are going to be that impressed no matter what the score is after playing Southern Utah. It's Southern Utah. You should never move up after beating an FCS program. As far as I'm concerned, that should be like it was an off week.
Yeah, it's a low division.
If you struggle, you should drop.
Right.
But if you dominate them, that's what you're supposed to do. So to expect them to move up from that, yeah, that was pie in the sky. Someone asked me on Twitter what I thought would happen. I said 50-50 only because I didn't know what else was going on. Like, I wasn't following other scores. For all I knew, 8 of the bottom, 10 lost. and create a vacancy for or going to jump up. So I said 50-50, but mostly I was thinking unless that happens, it's like a 2% chance. So, but if they, even if they win this week, I don't know if they're going to get in unless a bunch of teams lose because Nebraska's not ranked.
No.
So if you beat an unranked, I think they, in the AP poll, they only have one vote, I think.
Well, they also didn't have a very good opener, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. So beating them this week doesn't put Oregon in the top 25 either. Now, they beat them, and they beat Wyoming in a 3-0. Probably, if you're process of elimination, they'll be one of 25 3-0 teams. They'll probably be ranked.
All right. Talk with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sports Net. So we talked about the depth chart last week and no clear-cut choice behind Justin Herbert. And then, of course, as the game gets out of hand, you're like, who's coming in? Turns out it was Taylor Alley. So assuming Coach Tags didn't think he was only eligible.
Is he Tags now?
my efficiency knows no boundaries. I save syllables here and there like nobody's business.
I love it.
So assuming he didn't think he could only play Sheldon quarterbacks,
kids go to Sheldon, right?
Yeah. So what do you make of the depth chart at that position moving forward?
Okay, so I asked Taggart after the game, is this an indication, the fact that you played Alley and didn't play Burmeister at all, that the plan is to redshirt Burmeister? And I kind of figured that either way he was going to give me the same answer. And he said, no, that's not necessarily the case. We're not really looking to redshirt anyone right now, and they are playing a ton of freshmen. But, you know, they have those two guys slashed on the depth chart, which means they're neck and neck, right? If they're neck and neck, why would you not give the guy you recruited, right, your four-star quarterback you stole from Arizona, he decommitted from Arizona to come to you, why would you not give him some reps if he's really in the competition right now? That doesn't make any sense. You want to get him out there to give him some live bullets because you're going to play him at some point. So I think the reason they didn't play him is because they want to. They're hoping that Herbert stays healthy the entire season and that they only have to play Taylor in mop-up duty and they can preserve Burmeister's redshirt year so that he remains or he ends up being 2 years behind Herbert, who's a sophomore. That way he'll either have 3 years remaining of eligibility if Herbert goes pro early, or at the worst, we have two if Herbert plays out his 4 years. So you create that separation. And that might keep him around longer, too, because if he's like, I'm only going to get 1 year to start, he could bail, too.
Right.
But if Herbert were to go down, like go down, and be out for 2 or 3 weeks, then I think it goes back to, okay, who's the best guy, who gives us the best chance to win? And then I think you can see Burmeister climb into the conversation and maybe play over Alley.
Yeah, I think that's logical. So we've talked about it as far as recruiting and hitting that high level of success. And you've talked about it a million times. They've got to do damage inside on that defensive line. And the two freshmen on the nose, Jordan Scott and Austin Feliu, were in there. And historically, you're not going to get big stats from that position. But I know you talk with the coaches and players. How happy were they with the way those two big guys did their first college game?
Yeah, I mentioned that on Talking Ducks last night. And as soon as I said the stat thing, I swear to God, Joe and Newman just jumped all over. I'm like, God, calm down. I know. I don't get a ton of stats. Calm down. I'm getting to that part. But Alex Balducci was the nose. He had 40 tackles, 7.5 for loss, 3.5 sacks his senior year. So they do get some stats. Those two had zero against Southern Utah. All right? So Balducci averaged 4 tackles a game, a tackle for loss every, you know, by close to 0.7 a game. And these two combined for zero against the worst team they're going to play. So while them not getting a lot of stats is not a red flag, them getting zero stats, to me, is a red flag. One of them should have done something. No? You can't get in the backfield one time and make a... I guess so.
Have somebody run into you? Go down?
Just accidentally? An assisted tackle? You didn't just fall on a pile? So, again, and I watched them. I wouldn't say I've been broken them down, but I went back and watched part of the game, and I watched them a little bit, and they're doing their job in terms of holding off blockers and keeping them off Troy Dye, who said, hey, I had 10 tackles. I could probably split them with those guys, give each of them 5 for the job they did for me. Salavea said he saw good things. Levitt said he saw good things from them. Taggart as well. But they didn't give high praise. It was like, they did well, right? And then we thought they did a good, coach speak is funny. But when you ask Taggart about Billy Gibson and Pickett, well, then he gave you a bunch of superlatives. Like, oh, my God, those guys are playing. You know what I mean? So I think they know that that could be an issue moving forward against better teams as those two mature as young men. I mean, let's remember, dude. People have to remember. When Armstead, Buckner, and Balducci were true freshmen, and they all had to play a lot at Cal. Remember that? They had all the injuries. Like, yep. Remington was out, and a bunch of guys were out in 2012. Cal ran all over Oregon that night. Ran all over the Ducks. And those are probably the best trio of D-linemen, one of the best trio of D-linemen Oregon's ever had. Two are first-round picks, and they were freshmen. These two are freshmen. You can't expect too much. I think when Pagano comes back, I think he ends up playing a lot of nose to take pressure off those two.
Yeah.
Instead of the end.
I always say when a freshman plays his first college game, it's like the last game he played, there were 15 and 16-year-olds in there.
And for those two, there were 15 and 16-year-olds going, Lord, please don't kill me. Yeah. Don't let me die today. Could you imagine playing Jordan Scott as a 16-year-old, 230-pound guard? You're just like calling audibles. Like they call the run of your hole. You turn back to the quarterback and say, you better audible, man.
No, what you say is,
because I ain't blocking that dude.
You do what I did. You'd be like, football, not so much. I'll see you on the golf course. by the way, you mentioned Pickett and Gibson, and you know, sometimes you get caught up in the game, and then I hear after. I mean, they each played like 45, 50 snaps, and I don't know, it's almost like an umpire. They weren't that noticeable because they weren't getting burned. They pitched a shutout in the second half. I know you right. spoke with Coach Taggart about him, but also you talked with their position coach, Coach Hayward. What did he have to say about them? Because they did more than just get their feet wet.
Yeah, they love the athleticism of those two, and more importantly, the intelligence of those two in terms of they're just freshmen, and they've got good head on their shoulders, and they're figuring out, and they're doing their job, and then that allows their athleticism to flourish. And those two are the prime reasons why they moved Schuler to receiver, because they had Cleo Oliver, they had McGraw was developing, and then they had those two, and they got Juwan Williams is back as a senior who's played before, though he's injured right now. So they felt like they had good depth there, and they had two young freshmen they really like. And Brady Breeze is going to be back at some point,
yep.
too. So the fact that they, you know, like I said, they were way more positive about those two than they were about the two noses. Not that they were negative about the noses, but they were way more positive about the two safeties. But they like those guys moving forward. Again, though, we'll see how they look, you know, when they play
a Big Ten
competition.
Team.
Exactly. And in fact, Pac-12 team. But so far, so good as far as those guys are concerned.
All right. Lastly, looking ahead, obviously a huge upgrade, Nebraska. They didn't look great against Arkansas State. They've got a new defense. Mike Riley has his more prototypical quarterback in there. And by the way, Oregon, a 14-point favorite. So if you've peeked into your crystal ball, what are you looking for in this one?
You know, I think Oregon wins. It has the potential to maybe get away from Nebraska, but I've got it right now 44-34. I just look at last year's game when Oregon went in there and should have won that game. They ran all over Nebraska without Crosby, who got hurt in the first quarter, without Freeman, who rushed for 31 of the 336 yards before he got hurt. You pick up that game, that offensive line, you bring him into Autzen, you add Crosby, you add Freeman. And Nebraska's defense is not any better than it was last year based on what we saw against Arkansas State, who put up 400-plus yards passing on them. I think Oregon easily gains 500 yards, rushes for, you know, 275, 280, and just puts up 40 points. I can't see how Nebraska stops them. And on the other side, Nebraska, though, they have the run game, man. And this is where we're going to find out how that run defense is this week. Because if they can grind the clock and they still huddle. You know that? They still do that huddle.
Yeah. What is that thing? Are they meeting? Are they talking about us behind our back? What's going on in there?
They're passing exchanging recipes or something. I don't know. Swapping MP3 files or whatever. But no, so or checking their Instagram likes. But if they can grind the ball and eat clock, they have a chance to you know, basically keep the ball away from Oregon. We all know the classic, you know, strategy you would use against the Ducks. So I think they have a chance in that regard. And the quarterback, Tanner Lee, had a nice game. He looks like he could be pretty good when he has a good running game working for him. So I think they're going to make it interesting. I just think at home and with you know, Herbert playing with that offensive line, that running game helping him out, they're going to be unstoppable on offense.
All right. At Aaron J. Fentress on Twitter, CSNNW.com on the web. AF, great stuff as always, man. See you Saturday. Travel safe.
All right, take care.
Take it easy.